It's the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Thank you very much for listening. Alan Zweibel was one of the original writers on Saturday Night Live, there from the very beginning in 1975, and stayed with it through 5 years on that show. Later on in television, he worked to work on things like It's Gary Shandling Show, which he helped co-create and write and produce. And in the last decade or so, he's been a writer-producer on Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David, worked on a bunch of other shows, and also worked on Broadway plays. He co-wrote the Martin Short Show that was on stage in New York for a while, and Billy Crystal's 700 Sundays. And he's also been writing books. Back in 2006, he wrote a book called The Other Shulman, which won the Thurber Prize for American Humor. And his latest is a novel called Lunatics, which he co-wrote with Dave Barry. When that book first came out, he and Dave were both with me on this show. And now that it is out in paperback, I've invited Alan to join me solo here today to talk a little bit more. Hi, Alan. How are you?
Hey, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm doing just wonderfully. When I talked to you and Dave about the book, and we'll explain it in just a minute, what it's about, the last question I asked you was, have you sold it as a movie? And you kind of said, I can't say anything right now. So now it's been a while later, and I'm going to ask you again, have you sold it as a movie?
Yes, we have. We sold it to Universal with Steve Carell attached to play one of the leads.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, will you be working on the screenplay?
Yeah, Dave and I are working on it even as we speak. We're on our second draft, and, you know, it's really fun. You know, we're writing it pretty much the way we did the book. You know, he lives in Coral Gables, Florida. I live in Short Hills, New Jersey. God forbid we should be in the same room at the same time. It just hasn't worked out. So, you know, as we did the book where we alternated chapters, here we're going, you know, you do 10 pages, okay, I'll do the next 10. And eventually we're going to have to be together to conform everything. But we're having fun with it.
When you have a book that you write like that, that you send chapters back and forth, then you come out with the paperback version. Does the paperback version change from the original hardcover version? And how much will the screenplay be different from those two?
Okay, well, the first question, the paperback version is in fact the same version. We added some things to it in the supplement, at the appendix at the end. We actually had them publish a number of mine and Dave's emails back and forth to each other about what we were doing, what we were writing, and what the process was, and they're really pretty funny, you know.
Yeah.
In writing the book, you know, this is a story about two guys who have a feud, and I assumed one character, Dave, who assumed the other one. So I wrote the first chapter as my character, sent it to him. His character reacted and moved the story forward, and we kept them ping-ponging back and forth that way until until the editor said, okay, maybe you should finish this because we're publishing it next month.
Yeah.
So that was that. But the screenplay is different because we don't have two different views. We have a story that just unfolds. So I'm writing for what was Dave's character, and he's writing for what was my character in the book, and we're just, you know, laying out this story that just unveils and keeps going. So it is different. It isn't as singular as the book was. You know, like I said, we had two guys. One was a referee of a girl's 10 and under championship soccer game. And when one of the 10-year-old girls kicks what would be the winning goal, he calls her offside, nullifying the goal. That girl's father goes ballistic. He's an overzealous soccer dad. So what Dave and I did, I said to him, I said, listen, let's have a feud. I'll play the voice of the ref. You play the voice of the soccer dad. And let's see how this small New Jersey suburban feud, how it escalates. Who knows? By the end of it, there may be a new pope. Who knows? So as it happened, I wrote the first chapter, sent it to him. And my guy, the ref, was very buttoned down, played by the rules, a very good citizen, low-key guy. who might go home and watch The Sound of Music with his family.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent it to him. He sends me back a guy who is so gross and over the top, you know, bigot and vile. And he, where, you know, he amuses himself by going into a room and watching Silence of the Lambs. So and Dave was right. Dave was right to do it that way, because we figured if there should be a movie, or even in the book, it's a buddy story. It's like, if you remember The In-Laws, the original movie, The In-Laws.
Oh, one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah, with Alan Arkin and Peter Falk.
Yep.
You had two guys who were opposites. If they're too similar, there's really no conflict and there's no way to go.
Yep.
In terms of character arcs. You know, it's also, you can also liken it to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So my guy would be the Steve Martin character, whereas Dave's was John Candy in that movie was soft-spoken, a little bit of a blowhard, but not like Dave's character. Dave's character is just disgusting.
Yeah. What's funny about it is the book is called Lunatics, plural, and it starts off with just one guy, Dave's character, who is the lunatic, but he turns your guy into one.
Well, yeah, there's a transformation there, and actually the title came from the editor. When we sold the book, we wrote 100 pages, and then we gave it to our agents who sold the book to Putnam. And a really nice editor there named Neil Niren, when he read those 100 pages, and as we started sending him, you know, every 20 or 30 more, our original title was Offsides, which is what the ref called, you know, the 10-year-old girl.
Yep.
And he said, you know, that's just sort of a vague song, you know, sports reference. He said, I noticed that the two of you keep on referring to each other in the first handful of pages as lunatics. And he says, let's just call the book that. And we went, fine. You know, that's one less thing we had to do.
Right. Now, I've had Dave on the show, not just with you, but also with another guy that he's written with, Ridley Pearson. The two of them did the Peter and the Starcatcher series and have worked on other projects as well. I'm wondering if working with Dave on one novel has inspired you perhaps either write a sequel to Lunatics or to perhaps come up with a new idea and write with him again. Or is there somebody else who you're now going to co-author with?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. My desire to work with Dave again is profound. I'm not sure that we would do a sequel to Lunatic, not with these characters, because I don't know where else it is to take them, because when they go on this, you know, this feud takes them around the world, essentially.
Right.
And, you know, as a result, they end up bringing democracy to Cuba. They deliver 2 million bananas to the shores of Somalia to help with the, with the famine.
Yep.
They, you know, we bring peace to the Middle East. So I don't know where else we can go with these two. If we can, he's kind of, I know he's got another book that he's just starting to tour about for. So at the end of the month, he's coming to New York, and we're going to go to dinner. I wanted, you know, he and I want to discuss the possibility of another book, and I also have an idea that I'd love to do with him for television. So there's that. As far as working with anybody else is concerned, you know, I come from TV, which is a highly collaborative medium. Things are done, by and large, in groups. You know, you may write it the first draft yourself, but then it becomes the show's script, you know, and I'm used to working in teams, in rooms filled with other writers, where there's a synergy of making something better just by virtue of the excitement and the different sensibilities in the room. So I have that built into my system, you know. That said, there are a couple of people that I am considering asking if they want to write a book with me. Yeah. In addition to Dave.
This is the Big 550 KTRS. I'm Paul Harris talking with Alan Zweibel. His book with Dave Barry called Lunatics is now out in paperback. I mentioned in the introduction that he worked on the first 5 years of Saturday Night Live. It is there that he developed a very close friendship with one of the all-time great TV comedians, Gilda Radner. Let me play a little bit of her work on Weekend Update. This would probably be 76, maybe 1977.
A Mr. Richard Feder from Fort Lee, New Jersey, writes in and says, Dear Roseanne, Roseanne Dana, last Thursday I quit smoking. Now I'm depressed, I gained weight, my face broke out, I'm nauseous, I'm constipated, my feet swelled, my gums are bleeding, my sinuses are clogged, I got heartburn, I'm cranky, and I have gas. What should I do? Mr. Fader, you sound like a real attractive guy.
Gilda Radner on Saturday Night Live as Rosanna Dana, a piece that you wrote for her, right, Alan?
Oh, yeah. That was a character that Gilda and I created together. And Richard Fader was a brother-in-law who lived in Fort Lee, New Jersey.
Your brother-in-law?
Yeah. And I, we basically, the first few of them, we had different people who wrote in. But once I settled on him, he wrote the rest of the letters. And he had sort of a character because he would ask these silly questions all the time. And so she developed a rapport with this unseen letter writer.
Yep.
But that was total collaboration between me and Gilda. It was, and it just, at the time, my God, it was so popular that, you know, audiences wanted more and more. And we just had to sort of keep it down a little bit so, you know, people wouldn't get sick of it.
Now, I mention it because there's a little bit of a controversy recently, and when we talk about your friendship with her, not only did you work together on Saturday Night Live, but you helped write her Broadway show, Gilda Live. You convinced her to come back on TV when she had cancer to appear on It's Gary Shandling's show, and you wrote about your very close relationship in the book Bunny Bunny, which then was produced on stage as well. Recently, there has been a little bit of controversy about Gilda's Club, and it's actually because of Gilda's Club that you and I first met when you were here in St. Louis, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. I had you on the show, and we talked a little bit about it, and we actually got to meet face-to-face, which I don't get to do with all of my guests. But Gilda's Club is, well, you explain what it is and what the controversy is.
Well, yeah, you know, when Gilda got sick, there was a place in L.A. called the Wellness Community. And that place really helped her a lot. And basically, it was a support community for cancer patients and their families. And she looked forward to going there. She felt vital there. She was with people who were going through the same thing she was. And one of her last wishes, essentially, was that these places are founded and proliferate. And so after she passed, Gene Wilder and a woman named Joanna Bull created what's called Gilda's Club. And Gilda's Club is exactly that. Gilda had coined a phrase. She had said that, you know, having cancer is like belonging to a club that you don't want to be a member of.
Mm-hmm.
And they called it Gilda's Club, which are these support communities for cancer patients and their family. They're nonprofit. They're free. They're totally free. And the flagship one started in New York, and then they started popping up all over the place. There may be 30 of them now. I'm sure I'm off by 5 or maybe even 10, but there's about that many. And it had always been my belief that if somehow Gilda knows about it or if she knew about this, she would be equally, if not more, proud that this is her legacy than her TV work, than her comedy, which was obviously so important to her. When she came on It's Gary Shandling Show, which I created with Gary Shandling, yeah, you're right. It was her last television appearance, and she had short hair, and she had cancer. And she came on and made cancer jokes. It was her belief that you look at it in the eye, and you don't let it get the best of you. You can't be a sitting duck for this thing. And she became an example to the whole world. She went on the cover of Life magazine. She went to Laker games with a bald head, and Kareem used to come over and point to his own bald head, and he used to joke. And she was just a poster child, if you will, for how to deal with this affliction. So these Gilda's Clubs started popping up all over the place. And like I said, there's about 30 and probably about 10 more in the works. And I've done, as have a lot of people, everything we could to keep these Gilders clubs funded and alive. Just that's how you and I met in St. Louis. It was at a big fundraiser I spoke at for the St. Louis Gilders Club.
Right.
Well, within the last, I don't know, it's hard to put a, you know, it on a calendar on it, but recently, Wellness Community and Gilders Club merged, which seemed like a very, very natural kind of marriage, given Gilda was a member of both. And she was a member of Wellness, and Gilders Club was named after her. This new organization has somehow decided, and I don't know whose genius idea this was, I don't know what the motivation was. They're slowly working Gilda's name out of the name of the club.
Mm.
They say they are leaving it up to local chapters to decide whether or not they're going to keep Gilda's name, you know, keep it called Gilda's Club. That's a lie, okay? Because they've got them over a barrel. There's funding involved. There's all sorts of legalities where they're not allowed to use the new clubs. They're not allowed to use the name. And it's just baloney. And the reason that they're giving is that younger people don't know who Gilda Radner is.
Ugh.
And I wrote a piece for the Huffington Post about 2 months ago addressing it, and everyone is appalled. You know, look, let's say there is a young person who doesn't know who Gilda is. So let them ask. And then what will they be told? That she was a very famous, very funny comedian who entertained millions of people every week on television. And then when she did come down with cancer, she didn't retreat. Like I said, she looked it in the eye. She came on a Gary Shandling show. She was out in the public. She made jokes about it. And she became an example, you know, of how to deal with this thing. And, I concluded the piece, you know, it's just stupid. If there are other reasons, say what they are. But I don't know who Sloan or Kettering is. I just imagine that they were cancer doctors because there's a cancer hospital named after them.
Yeah.
You know, why not change the name of the Verrazano Bridge because people don't remember Amerigo Vespucci, found America in the 15th century, or Lou Gehrig's disease. It's the stupidest reason in the world.
Yeah.
We have to leave a paper trail as to who came before us, why things are called what they are, and those stories become inspirational in and of themselves. So it's a ridiculous reason, and shame on them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm glad we got a chance to talk about that, and I hope that the people at the St. Louis chapter aren't thinking about changing it, and shame on those at the other chapters who are considering changing it as well. They don't understand who the woman was themselves. I think that's not what it is. They're saying young people don't know who it is. I think it's the adults who don't understand who Gilda was and what she did.
Absolutely. She's the embodiment of everything you want that place to be, okay? Funny and strong and brave and filled with hope, you know? My God, if you had to manufacture, if you had to create a person that this place would be named after or who should be a model, an inspiration to people who, God forbid, have cancer, you would create Gilda.
Right.
But why create? She's there already.
Yep.
You know, take them into place. Show old tapes just like you ran of Rosanna Dana. These young people will laugh their asses off and let them become infused with what her spirit was.
Absolutely right. Alan Zweibel, an emphatic supporter of Gilda when she was alive and of Gilda's Club now in her memory, and co-author of Lunatics with Dave Barry, the book that is now out in paperback. Always a pleasure, Alan. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks a million, Paul. Take care.
This is the Big 550 KTRS.